Log Talk Radio.
Hi, good evening, everyone. This is Lori Pica, and welcome to Kitchen Politics 123, the radio show. Tonight, we are in Season 6, Episode 1, the Biden-Harris 2024 Full Speed Ahead. We'll be talking about their accomplishments and how they have to win, how it's a must that we win the election. You can call in tonight at 515-605-9802 and just say your first name and where you're calling from. Joe Biden has proven that he has what it takes to lead. Imagine if Trump were the U.S. president at this time, with such instability around the world. Biden brings calmness and has a steady hand, experience in diplomacy in a critical time of uncertainty. Kamala Harris brings a level of maturity and a woman's touch to every situation. Politics about machismo most times. And it takes a woman's touch to bring calmness and fresh perspective to complex issues. Where does America and the world go from here? Not with cowardly, spineless politicians who go with wherever the wind blows. That is what Republicans are continuing to do as they bow down to twice impeached 91 counts of fraud indicted former President Donald Trump. They rather follow a rapist and a deviant than listening and catering to the people who elect them. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have their collective shit together. Trump and the Republicans don't. Are we going to move forward with progress or go back to strife and hate? Thank you for joining us tonight. Call in at 515-605-9802. And like I said, just say your first name and where you're calling in from and be respectful of the host and any other callers who may be on the line at the same time. And you can visit our website at www.kitchenpolitics123.com. Eric Brantley is sitting in tonight as guest host with me, Lori Pica. And this is Kitchen Politics 123 radio show with David Franklin and Lori Pica. David is under the weather, so he won't be speaking tonight. We're not antisocial, just anti-stupid. So let's get cooking. Eric,
okay.
Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you. And okay. This is Eric Brantley. Introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. Eric Brantley here, also in the state of Michigan. I am a precinct delegate, trustee, and activist in the Michigan Democratic Party, but I also connect with Democratic activists and organizers and candidates and officials in all states that I can. I run a YouTube show, and I do Facebook Live videos where I talk about the achievements and the accomplishments and the proposed policy ideas for not only the Biden-Harris White House, but also many Democratic officials across the country, including governors, senators, congresspeople, local people. I'm friends with some state representatives like Samantha Steckloff, who's a close friend. Shout out to her, who's also been named Legislator of the Year of 2022. I use my platform to do live videos, not only to talk about the achievements, but also I bring on people where I talk to candidates live and kind of help promote their campaigns. And I do that for many Democrats in many states. So if you are listening to this and you have a Democratic candidate or official or organizer or activist that you need me to reach out to or that you feel I should talk to, feel free to give their information. Feel free to give them my information. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Subscribe if you will. All of my contact info is there, my email address, my phone number. Call, text, or email me at any time. Good to be here.
Okay, great, Eric. That's awesome. So we're going to start out with Israel and Hamas because it's very important that we talk about this because it is like the hottest topic right now, and it's so sad in so many ways. It's beyond sad. It's horrific in my eyes. So Israel and the Hamas war live updates. Blinken makes surprise visit to the occupied West Bank. Yes, he went over the weekend. The Secretary of State visited after Palestinian officials said an Israeli strike on a refugee camp in the Gaza Strip killed at least 47 people and wounded dozens more. And this is what we know. Secretary of State Antony Blinken today visited the occupied West Bank, where he met with Palestinian Authority President Mohammed Abbas. He made it clear that the Palestinians must not be forcibly displaced, as statement said. An Israeli strike on the Al-Maghazi refugee camp in the Gaza Strip early today killed at least 47 people and wounded dozens more. The Gaza Health Ministry said in a statement, NBC News could not independently verify the number of deaths and asked the Israel Defense Forces for comment. Israel said it would press on with its offensive in Gaza, despite appeals from the U.S. and other nations for a pause in fighting to get aid to desperate civilians. More than 1.4 million people have been displaced in Gaza, and health officials say there's more than 9,700 have died. Israeli says 1,400 people were killed in the Hamas attack, and 241 are still held hostage. NBC News, Richard Engel, Raf Sanchez, Josh Letterman, Matt Bradley, Megan Fitzgerald, Jay Gray, Hala Gorani, and Chantel Da Silva are reporting from the region. When all of this happened, yes, I thought it was horrific. I thought it was their 9/11. It was their 9/11, just like we had our 9/11. And that was, I thinking to myself, yes, they have to retaliate. They have to, you know, go after Hamas. And now that it's been well over a month, maybe it's 5 weeks, I see that they didn't start bombing right away, but they are now, and they seem, in my opinion, that they are relentless. Right now, I read that they do not have any internet, no lights again, no water. The thing is that I feel that it's inhumane to the Palestinian people that are still there, that we're not able to get out of there for whatever reason. Or maybe they didn't want to leave. But the thing is that Israel has to understand that the world is going to turn against them if they continue to bomb the way they have been bombing and killing so many people in its wake. President Biden has said over and over again, you know, to pause the bombing so that these people can get out and get to safety. And so far they haven't done it. And that's why Secretary Blinken was there to try to talk some sense into them as well. And it doesn't sound like Netanyahu is going to concede at all. It just seems like he's going to go forward with his continued bombing. It's almost like a genocide, in my opinion. Eric, what do you think about this?
You know, again, this goes back to the argument of, you know, when these countries are attacked like this, it's, you know, how do those countries retaliate? What does the United States do in response? And again, it started off with Israel was attacked, so now we have to defend Israel's right to attack, and then they attack the people in Palestine. Now it's, okay, now we're going against Israel. It's the whole thing is complicated. There's many people in both parties who seem to have had opposing views on it or maybe switched views. Of course, the whole thing is unforgivable. I mean, Hamas started this mess. And I almost am leaning towards the idea of, you know, there has to be a way to really take out Hamas. I don't have the answer as to how.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really, it should be incumbent upon some of these other countries to find a way to negotiate a peace deal instead of the United States stepping into it all the time. And that's why I say once something like that happens, then it's easier for us to, you know, pull out. And that's what we need to done and what we should have done with a lot of the other countries we've been involved in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of my take on that in a way.
Yeah, you know, the problem is that Hamas, they're murderers, they're rapists, they're killers. They have no, absolutely, they do not, life is not sacred to them. They don't care. I mean, they cut off babies' heads. They rape women when they take them, you know, when they take them in. And it's a situation that you're sort of damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. From what I understand and from what I've seen, they have many, many tunnels underneath the city of Gaza, and they go for miles upon miles. So, you know, that could be where they are. And to get to those tunnels, I don't know how they're going to do that. So I just hope that Israel, in my opinion, just takes a breath and think about the Palestinians that are there that really have nothing to do with what's happened. You know, they did not attack Israel. Hamas did. Hamas is in Gaza. So I hope that Netanyahu decides that there's too much pressure coming from the West and all these other countries that want him to at least take a break, because it's looking really bad right now. And that's not a good thing for anyone, not for our country either, because what's happening is that the Palestinians in this country are going to blame Biden for this. And really, it's not his fault. He's been asking them all along to hold off, to let these people get out, you know, to bring in trucks with aid and water and food and medicine. But they were just too much in a hurry to get their revenge. So I don't know how this is going to work out.
And that's why I say the foreign policy thing is a little more complicated for me. And that's why I said because you can argue that almost all of the recent presidents have had, you know, some failures on foreign policy. And while some of them might have had mixtures like Obama and even like with Biden, you know, there's a number of things that occurred under their watches that were good. And then there are some bad things that continued. I just think that, I mean, like I said, I don't have all the answers, but if I just had it my way, I would have just pulled out of most of those countries to begin with. Because, like I said, we've already had so much tension going on with Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria. Now we went into Somalia for no good reason. And then aided and abetted the genocide in Yemen.
Yeah. It's in a lot
and it's like if we really pull out of these countries, we wasted all this money going there when a lot of that money could have been used to keep the military budget but still advance social programs and social services.
Yep, you're right. So let's just hope that Israel comes to its senses and at least gives a pause of the bombing, and some of these people can get out of there, because the city is nothing but powder right now. That's what it looks like. Bombed powder.
Yeah.
So the next thing,
and like I said, people still have to remember some of the good things that were done on foreign policy under the Biden administration. I mean, we know it was a messy process, but at least we finally got out of Afghanistan.
Yes, we did.
You know, the Obama administration had lessened the tensions and decreased the troop levels in places like Iraq, and under Biden, he massively reduced the drone war by about 80-90%. And so he nearly eliminated the drone war, which is a huge move. Now, of course, we know that it should be completely eliminated, but that's still a major improvement and a huge step up.
Yeah.
I don't think any Republican administration would have done that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just want to talk for a moment about the new speaker, Mike Johnson, the new speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. All know, unanimously voted in by, you know, the GOP, the Republicans there.
Yep.
And I just want to go over a little bit of his views on abortion, because this man, the very first speech that he made the day that he became Speaker of the House, I knew right away that he was going to bring religion into it. And we specifically in our Constitution know that, you know, there is a separation between church and state, and he doesn't seem to want to recognize that, which I have a problem with. So I'm just going to read some of the things with his views. His number one thing is he compares abortion to the Holocaust. He also suggested abortion is responsible for school shootings. He also said he wants to force women to stay pregnant even if they do not want to be, and use force of law to make it a reality that they are forced to do so in all 50 states.
Wait, hold on a second. Hold on one second. I'm sorry to cut you, but he said who was responsible for school shootings?
He suggested that abortion is responsible for school shootings. It makes no sense. How that can be.
Well, if I was talking to him, I would ask him, so what did abortion have to do with the 18-year-old guy who shot up the Parkland High School in Florida?
It has nothing to do with it. So what I'm trying to – these are his actual quotes, and he's a little bit loose in the head, okay? And also, how can he compare abortion to the Holocaust? How?
Well, you know what? Here's what I have to say to that. Again, that number one, if you're going to take the – now, I understand the argument. People want to sit there and say, you know, if abortion is killing babies, okay, we want to be pro-life and let them live. Outside of the aspect that you don't care that when they get older, whether they don't have health care, if they don't get a good education or they don't get the proper wages, all that stuff aside, if you want to compare that to the Holocaust because multiple babies were killed, well, then you know what I think is comparable to the Holocaust? I would say the Bush-Cheney foreign policy, where they lied about weapons of mass destruction, got us into Iraq and Afghanistan, and hundreds of thousands, if not billions of people were killed as a result of that. If you want to compare anything to the Holocaust, it should be that.
I agree with you. Absolutely, 100%.
Which not to say that they're the only administration that did that. Obviously, the following administration continued it, but they're the ones who started it. And so, therefore, that if they want to sit there and say that that's like the Holocaust, well, you know what? Us killing these random people in these other countries for no good reason is also, you know, it's – well, first of all, that seems more Holocaust-like to me compared to anything else.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to anything else. But go on. What else did he say?
Well, I'll read the other one again. He wants to force women to stay pregnant even if they do not want to be pregnant, and use force of law to make it a reality in all 50 states. That's his dream. The next one is to ban stem cell research and IVF care, which many couples rely on to become parents. What does it matter? Why does he want to ban stem cell research? That can help a lot of people that are sick for different reasons. And I don't know where his warped mind is, but so what? It's research. It's science. There is nothing wrong with science.
It doesn't really surprise me that a MAGA Republican is against research.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And to tell you the truth, I mean, I don't even really know that much really about stem cell research. I never looked into that really. But, I mean, that's something that somebody would have to ask somebody who's in that type of field. But I would have to look up, for me, the pros and cons of that and kind of weigh that and kind of match that to what he said. And then I'm willing to bet that most of his statements on that are not logical as with the other things. But, I mean, the truth of the matter is, it comes down to it, is that whether it's him, that's why I said he's no different really from Kevin McCarthy or Matt Gaetz. He's just as useless as them.
Yep. Better believe it. And then the IVF care, that's an invertebrate fertilization. In other words, if a couple is having trouble getting pregnant, they can have medication to help along, or they can have a surrogate. So he's against that as well. He wants that banned. Now, if you are anti-abortion, why wouldn't you want couples to try to become parents? These are people that want to have children. That makes no sense to me as well.
Lori, so. I figured it out.
Oh, hey, how you doing, Elaine?
Hi, I figured it out. With research, we realize that you can freeze embryos. You can't freeze a baby, but you can freeze an embryo.
Yes, you can.
An embryo is not a baby.
No,
it's not. That is why he wants to stop all research.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That makes sense.
Doesn't that make sense? That's why he wants to stop the research, because too many people are learning science because of the mass media that we have, which is the Internet, that embryos are not a baby, and they can be frozen for a million years, and then they can be fertilized, and then they can become children.
Yes, they can. And, you know, sometimes people use that. You know, they do that because, you know, in the future they may want to become parents. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
There's a million different reasons why people do that, and I see nothing wrong with that. Absolutely
nothing. Sometimes a woman will have her eggs frozen because she doesn't want to have children until she is settled in her career or marriage or whatever.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. So... Yeah, like I said,
I didn't mean to jump in, but I was sitting here and I figured out why he wanted that banned.
Yeah, absolutely. The next one is he wants to ban abortion nationwide and criminalize providers, including a bill to ban abortion at 6 weeks before many women even know that they are pregnant. And that's all across the country. And the last one is to criminalize abortion, and he wants to ban certain forms of birth control. There you go. So he's a fanatic.
But here's my thing about that, and I've said this before. Like, the thing that absolutely kills me about Republican arguments when it comes to things like abortion and being pro-life, here's the thing. They want to... And this is why I say, I don't think I'll ever get the opportunity to do this, but if any chance, if I was ever standing in front of a group of Republican politicians, if I stood in front of the Republican Senate and the Republican House and say, I would say this, I say, well, you people are supposed to be pro-life, which seems to imply that you want people to have a life, you want people to live. Now, I would say that with you banning things like the certain forms of abortion pills or contraceptives or whatever you had just listed there. Mm-hmm. They want to ban certain forms of birth control, and they want to have, they're forced to, ban national ban on abortions and force them to have the baby. Mm-hmm. Well, then you know what else we should also force on them? We should also force the idea that when they get older, they should have access to health care, which would help them live. They should have access to an education, which would, make them smarter, or at least when they, go to college if they want to. We should force another stimulus check so that they can feed their kids and they can feed those babies grow up. Those are the other things that add to being pro-life. The problem on the Democrat side is nobody has really brought up that type of argument. But then the problem with the Republican side is, of course, they're not going to acknowledge it because, well, just like they said, they're pro-life just until the baby is born. And then right after that, they don't care about if the child goes to school or if something messed up in the family, and let's say they grew up in a bad family and now they've grown up and they've become either some type of criminal or drug dealer or alcoholic or whatever. They don't care about any of that. They don't care if the baby, when they turn 18, they go die in an illegal war. They don't care about any of that. All they want is, we just want it born, but nothing else after that.
Yeah, there's no plan. There's no plan for this child. You know, and I have asked a few, I've had a few conversations with a few people that are, you know, anti-abortion, and I asked them straight out, well, if you're anti-abortion, would you adopt? And they say no. So, really? So you're pro-life, but you don't even want to adopt this baby, you know? So really, you're a hypocrite. You're a hypocrite. That's all.
Well, let me tell y'all this. I'll tell you what I've actually told a conservative voter. Now, there was a guy named Mike who's a conservative who called into this show before, and I forgot what state he's in. I want to say maybe around the Minnesota area. I can't remember. But I said this to him, and I've actually said this to a few people. I'm willing to slightly alter my stance on abortion, even though I still want the woman to have her own choice. I said, I'm willing to slightly alter that opinion only if your side is willing to slightly alter your opinion when it comes to things like militarism and war. Because if you want somebody to live, if you want the child to be born, but then you don't care if that child grows up and then dies in an illegal war because you want to keep overfunding the military, getting involved overseas, then what you're not technically being pro-life. What you really are is just pro-birth. And if you just say that, and see, that's why I've always said, I don't care if you're on the far left or the far right, or anything in the middle. The fact of the matter is that whatever it is that you feel, I'm a proponent of honesty and reality. And so if whatever it is that you feel, no matter how extreme or radical other people may view it, you just have to be honest about where you stand and just own your stance. And so if you don't care about what happens to that baby after it's born, but you just want it to be born, at least just say you're pro-birth. It's more honest, and therefore you can have a better conversation that way.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is, Eric, is that guns in schools, you know, all these killings and shootings in schools. And it's, you know, some of them are young children, young adults, college students. And if you're really pro-life, why can't we have a conversation about sensible gun control in this country? Why? If you're really pro-life. You really care about the life of these children in these schools. It's so hypocritical. They want it both ways. Can't have it both ways. You just can't. You know, you either want to have gun control and good, you know, sensible law, or you're not pro-life. I'm sorry. You're just not. So it's just ridiculous. It's just so, I don't know when it'll ever get solved, but we shall see what happens. But this man is definitely, if you start reading some of his stuff, he's a fanatic. And he scares me to death.
It boils really down to control. It boils down to control. If they can control people, family life, in their bedroom, then they can control their minds and hearts when it comes to everything else. It boils down to control.
It does. It really does. And I think that that's what, you know, that's what they want. They want to control, but yet their policies are so illogical and they don't help people. They hurt people. So why in God's name would we even want to vote for anybody like that? You know,
that's why we've got to keep religion and politics separate.
And I just have one more thing that I'm going to read about him, and then I'm done with him for tonight.
And then we have to emphasize the Biden-Harris achievements.
Yes, we are. Then we will go forward. But this is from the Midas Touch. I'm sorry. This is from No Lie with Cohen, with Brian Cohen. The footage has been surfaced from last year, showing Mike Johnson talking about how he and his son have monitored each other's porn intake. He has been scrubbing posts from his social media about it. When I read that today, I lost my breath. I was like, what am I reading? Him and his son? Him and his son?
It doesn't surprise me.
Wait, hold on, hold on. Wait. I missed that. He said, wait, hold on. I missed that one. He said him and his son what?
Okay, footage has surfaced from last year showing Mike Johnson talking about how he and his son monitored each other's porn intake. He has been scrubbing posts from his social media about it. So he got caught, in other words.
Okay.
Is that sick or what?
You know what? It is kind of sick, but it, coming from somebody like that, it's not surprising.
Yeah, and this is a man that wants, you know, abortion criminalized and, you know, everything else in this world that's fanatic. And yet he's monitoring porn. Mike Johnson, you need a psychiatrist. Okay, let's go on.
Yeah.
Oh, let's go on. I'll let you read this, Eric. What Republicans don't want women to remember?
Okay, I got you. Yeah, I'm pulling that back up now. So apparently in 1970, it's taking a minute for it to pull up. Okay. I just hit my computer right now, and so now I'm just pulling this up. They voted against a few pieces of legislation that would go towards benefiting women in many ways. So so there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 I see right here. In 1974, under, I think at the time, the president was Gerald Ford. In 1974, Republicans and conservatives voted against the Equal Credit Act that would allow women to apply to their own credit cards and mortgage loans. What they have always said was men should always co-sign. In 1978, under Jimmy Carter, they voted against the Pregnancy Act. They wanted to keep the employer's right to fire pregnant women. In 1980, they voted against allowing women to report sexual harassment in the workplace. They said men will be men. In 2012, under Obama, they voted against the equal pay for equal work for women. They said men should be paid more. In 1994, under Clinton, and in 2012, under Obama, they voted against the Violence Against Women Act, which helps victims of domestic violence and rape and educates law enforcement. And in 1972, under Nixon, they fought against selling birth control to single women until the Supreme Court made it available for all. And so, you know what, again, this tells me that I really, really wish, and it might be a little bit more difficult in my position because I'm a guy, and when guys bring up certain arguments about men and women to women and girls, that, I mean, we risk the idea of being called misogynist or sexist or we don't understand it. But I guess my thing is that if I was talking to a woman who was either conservative or was independent but right-leaning, or maybe somebody who is a leftist but is conflicted on who to vote for, or they don't like the two parties, I guess my question to them would be, if you look at those right there and you could see that most Republicans voted against those things while most of the Democrats voted for those things, then how can you sit there and tell me that you're conflicted on who to vote for, and how can you sit there and say that the two parties are the same?
Amen.
And so that's what I'm saying. And like I said, I try to bring that argument up to people, and I try not to sound like I'm sitting on some high horse or on the soapbox or like I'm preaching like I know everything. I just generally want to understand some people's views on that, because that's why I haven't really gotten any responses when I bring that up to certain people. I've actually had, I don't remember if I talked to somebody in person, but I've brought up the idea before that you had some conservative women that had abortions due to whatever circumstance. And I said, well, if the Republicans had it their way, and let's say the Republican policy was in effect into law, and let's say it stayed that way, then you wouldn't be able to do that. The reason why you were able to do that to begin with is because that's something that the Democrats fought for your right to do. Because being pro-choice doesn't mean pro-abortion. It doesn't mean that we celebrate women aborting babies. It just means that I am a guy I have to sit back because this is not my body, so therefore it's not my decision. So therefore you make the choice that you feel is best suited for you, because I don't know what situation you've been in, whether you were sexually assaulted or whether you were the victim of incest or whatever other underlying circumstance that I may not be able to think about right now. I said, when you look at the two right there and where the two parties stand with that, you should be able to factor in those bullet points and then kind of make your own assessment. Now, you could still make the argument to say that some of these conservative women might lean that way on abortion, but then they still support the Republican Party when it comes to fiscal issues, like what should the minimum wage be, or how should women and men get paid the same, or if you want to talk about one person who feels liberal on social issues but then conservative on the fiscal issues, or vice versa. I actually am a little bit more sympathetic to that argument, and I can understand that. But when it comes to those things alone, if you're a woman and you're a single-issue voter and these things right here have affected you or affected your daughter or granddaughter or somebody you know,
yeah,
who's a woman, then this list right here tells you exactly where the two parties stand, and they're showing you where they are.
Yeah. I mean,
They voted against equal pay.
Yes.
Yeah, they did that in 2012
when
Obama was president.
Yeah, 2012. They said men should be paid more. That's what that was their excuse. So in other words, the Republican Party is more of a man's world than it is a woman's world.
And
women are just there to have babies. That's it. Well, I got news for them. Not happening. So it's pretty.
Well, and you know what? I think the Biden administration passed something, or at least they attempted to pass it. I can't remember which, that safeguarded access to abortion. Now, again, to go back to what I said earlier about slightly altering my stance on that, I would say this. I think that there should be many things that, first of all, this is where the Republicans get it twisted, and this is why they run into their own logic. They're saying that they're anti-abortion, that they're pro-life. They want to ban abortions, but at the same time, they would ban certain things that would control a woman's pregnancy. So they want to ban birth control pills. And okay, well, here's the thing. Even as a guy, if I can make the argument to say, well, yeah, it's the woman to get pregnant, and that by telling her that she can't use birth control pills is almost the equivalent of telling a guy that he can't wear a condom, because it's like it may not sound like it makes sense, but if you really think about it. If you have access and expanded birth control, then that means that there's much less of a chance of them getting pregnant, which means they won't have an abortion if they're not pregnant. But they're saying they want to ban that, and so women are saying, well, we don't. Either I didn't have this, or I didn't have the money for it, and then we go on to the other thing. And that's what, again, Democrats are not the best messengers when it comes to this. So therefore, Republicans don't have to face the consequence of actually having to fight face to face with that argument. That's why I say they run into their own logic all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is that I've seen many commercials on television that these men can mail order Viagra. No problem whatsoever. You go online, you get a gun, you get a script, order it online, you're done. 70-some cents a pill. I mean, that is so discriminatory. That is so disgusting to me. That they want to take away women's rights and give men more rights. It makes me sick. And without women in this world would be a lot worse than it is right now. They have no clue what it would be like.
Yeah, and so I want to say that in regards to that, and again, if since people know that obviously we're not single-issue voters, this would be a good time to point out achievements of, like I said, not only the Biden-Harris administration, but with what Democrats are doing across the country in many different states. I think that two of the best states that I've seen outside of Michigan and California, I would say Massachusetts and Minnesota, you know, as far as the ones I can think of off the top of my head. The state of Massachusetts did a thing where they gave free school lunches to kids. Now, I don't know if they did the free breakfast yet, but they at least got free lunches for K-12 students, and they did that. And conservatives might be shocked to hear this. The reason why they did that is because they taxed the rich. They didn't tax them by 40% or 30% or 20% or even 10%. They taxed them 4%. And so as a result, they used the percentage of the money that they taxed, and they got not only the free school lunches, But then they also use that to, I think there was something down there about improving transportation. They're building better roads. They're building better bridges. And then they're also making community college free for anybody who's at least 25 years old. And, of course, mm-hmm. if they have a certain, you know, GPA in high school or they, you know, apply to certain things. Mm-hmm. So they made community college free for that, and that came as a result of taxing the rich, which proves to you that when you do tax the rich, you can use that money to pay for the services that help the poor, poverty-level people, as well as people who make, you know, basic income, the working class. I said this works, and yep. That would not have happened if Massachusetts was a Republican state, because as you can tell, that's not happening in Florida. That's not happening in Texas or Alabama or Arkansas or Georgia or Mississippi or Louisiana or Oklahoma or any of the deep South states, Kentucky. That's not happening there. It's not happening there. Now, it may not be happening in all Democratic states, but when you look at all 50 states and then you look at the states that have done the free lunch program and the states that didn't, then the ones that are on the did side, the side that did it, most of those states are Democrat or at least Democrat leaning. Yeah. And that includes Minnesota, Michigan, California, I think maybe Arizona or New Mexico, even Oklahoma, which is a Republican state. I think they said that there was a Democratic legislator who tried to get that through, but I guess it didn't go through, but at least they fought mm-hmm. for it. And so when I bring this up to people, I say, this is why I usually vote for the Democrats, because of the things that they have done, or at least the things they're trying to do.
Well, you know, their whole, you know, the Democratic Party is, their goal is to help people, to raise them up, to help them have better jobs and, you know, to have better jobs and, you know, to thrive and have clean energy. But we will go through all of that. So there is such a stark difference between the two parties now that it's mind-boggling. I mean, it used to be that, you know, they were more bipartisan than they are now. But now, and as far as I'm concerned, there is such a stark difference between the two of them that even if you are a one-issue voter, you know, you have to look at the policies, because everything is negative on the other side unless you're a rich corporation, and then, you know, you don't have to pay any tax. There's one more point I want to make, Eric, and then we're going to go on, and it's very simple. It's Exxon just announced its highest profit in their 152-year history, raking in $19.66 billion, and Chevron's combined profits in the last quarter were equivalent to $14 million per hour. The Republican Party blames President Biden for gas prices to hide the truth. And that is the truth, because everyone has been blaming President Biden for now the gas has come down a little bit, but everyone's been blaming all these Republicans, and I see it online. They're blaming President Biden because of inflation and the gas prices are so high, and it's his fault. It's not. It's these greedy corporations. If they're making that kind of money, they could reduce their gas probably $1.50 or $2 a freaking gallon, and they'd still be making billions. That's what's sickening. And on top of it all, they don't pay taxes on this money.
Here's the thing about that too, is that, first of all, this is what I would say again if I was talking to a conservative. I've actually brought this point up to probably at least one or two conservatives in the past. I'll say this, that okay, if you want to blame, I understand the argument that says that when things in the economy go wrong or something happens because you're in your business, okay, they look to the president because that's the leader of the country. I get that, mm-hmm. but here's what I have to educate them on. The Democrats in the House, and they did this when Nancy Pelosi was the speaker, and of course, mm-hmm. there's no way that the House is going to do it now, because now the House is Republican, and they have Republican leaders like Kevin McCarthy and Mike Johnson and the other loudmouths mm-hmm. like Matt Gaetz and them. Here's the thing. Nancy Pelosi's Democratic House initiated a bill that was going to fight against price gouging, which also dealt with grocery prices, which also dealt with gas prices. Now, we've seen some grocery prices of some things go down, and we've also seen a lot of gas prices massively go down. Now, here's the thing about that. The Democrats initiated a bill that was going to fight against gouging, which means that if a company is going to price gouge, this bill or this law says, no, you can't do that. And then guess what? The Republicans voted against it. I don't even know if it got to the Senate. I think the House passed it. I don't know what happened once it got to the Senate. I know that Biden didn't sign it, and he didn't get a chance to sign it because it didn't pass the Senate, because more than likely, this is my theory, I have a feeling that Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, along with the other, like, all Republicans in there, probably voted against it. And for that matter, I could be wrong. It may not have even passed the House, but at least they initiated, they introduced it. And so this bill was ready for Biden to sign. While the Republican voters and independent voters are complaining about him, this was something that we brought to you, so we were attempting to lower the prices while your party voted against it. So you can't be mad at Biden. You can't be mad at Kamala. You can't be mad at Pelosi. You can't be mad at Bernie Sanders or Chuck Schumer or Maxine Waters or any Democrat official. You should be mad at Mitch McConnell. You should be mad at Ted Cruz, Rick Scott, Marjorie Greene, Lauren Boebert, Matt Gaetz, Kevin McCarthy. They went against this. And even the Republicans who may not have voted against it, they didn't speak out about it, which means that they were indirectly complicit in a way they allowed it to happen. And so this is what we've been trying to tell people. So I would say that goes back to the point that I made earlier. If Republicans are lucky enough to take back the government, and let's say all those things are reversed and now there's no chance of that happening, then I have no choice but to sit there and say, well, I voted for the party that tried to save us from this.
Yeah, we vote for the party that's going to save our lives. You know, not cut every social program that there is to help people that are in need. It's disgusting, to say the least. Okay, let's read some of his their accomplishments. Do you see them there, Derek?
Yep, I'll take this one.
Okay, go right ahead.
Well, according to this article, I see 10 major achievements that the Biden-Harris administration had accomplished. Of course, we know that there's way more than 10, and of course, I'll list some of the other ones later on, but we can get this one out the way. And to anybody who's curious about the article and you can't see this, and if you don't believe me, feel free to email me, BrantleyEric@gmail.com. My email address is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, so feel free to email me if you want to send the article. I'll send it to you. So this is according to Up North News, and this article was posted by Kia Vakil, and this was from January of 2023. That was earlier this year. We see right here that there are 10 accomplishments of the first 2 years of the Biden-Harris White House. And it says right here, over the past 2 years, the Biden-Harris administration and the Democratic-run House and Democratic-run Senate acted to lower health care and drug costs, fight climate change, and reduce energy costs, invest in mental health care, and invest in American manufacturing and infrastructure. Now, we have 10 things here. Number one is they lowered health care and drug costs. In August of 2022, President Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act into law. By doing so, he extended generous subsidies that make the Affordable Care Act health insurance plans more affordable. Those subsidies, as introduced as part of the Biden's American Rescue Plan, were set to expire at the end of 2022, but the Inflation Reduction Act extends them through 2025. The law will prevent an estimated 3 million Americans from losing their ACA insurance and 10 million more enrollees from paying more for their insurance plans, which also the administration also enrolled 16 million Americans onto the plan, so more Americans got health care as a result of that. As of this month, no Medicare recipient will spend more than $35 a month on insulin. That was good. That came part of the inflation reduction. More than 3 million Americans, 3 million Medicare beneficiaries nationwide rely on insulin, with the average patient spending $54 a month on prescriptions, an increase of nearly 40% in the past 15 years, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. Some Medicare recipients spent over $100 a month on insulin, though as certain brands charge higher prices than others. If you're a Medicare recipient, here's how else the bill benefits you. One, as of this month, all vaccines covered under Medicare Part D are completely free, which they were, and that was a good thing. Number two, the bill will cap out-of-pocket spending on prescription drugs to $2,000 a year starting in 2025 for seniors with Medicare Part D prescription drug plans. And three, it requires Medicare to negotiate the cost of 10 high-cost prescription drugs beginning in 2026 with additional drugs added in future years. Now, again, people have to understand, most Republicans were against that. And the reason why people benefited from that policy is because the Democrats introduced it, passed Nancy Pelosi's House, it passed Chuck Schumer's Senate, even with Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, I think even they voted on that one. And, of course, the Democratic president signed it into law, which made it effective. The second thing that they did was they fought climate change. They're fighting climate change and saving families money on energy. They have a significant, signature legislative accomplishment. The Inflation Reduction Act also represents the largest ever national investment in fighting climate change. The law is predicted to create up to 9 million jobs over the next decade while reducing premature deaths from air pollution and helping the U.S. dramatically reduce climate change causing emissions. Now, with that being said, there's something I want to throw in here right quick in case it's not here. They also, a lot of people on both sides don't realize or remember, is that so Biden had signed the Inflation Reduction Act in 2022, and inside of that bill, right before it passed, the Democrats had slipped into the IRA a provision. They slipped the provision into the IRA, which redefines carbon as a pollutant, which then allows the EPA to protect the environment as it should be doing. And, of course, you know, I think there was an argument about whether or not the Supreme Court was going to slap that down. But, again, that came as a result of Democrats. And we're telling people that even though it may not be a huge step for many people, it's certainly a step for others. And I'm not as well inclined on the issue of the climate change as many as some people on the left are. But, again, all those provisions that were laid right there, I mean, that was almost a unanimous vote. That was almost a vote where nearly every single Democrat, far left and center left, voted for it, and nearly every Republican, far right and center right, voted against it. So, again, that's why the Inflation Reduction Act was one of Biden's biggest legislative accomplishments.
And you know, Eric,
the
younger people like Gen Z and millennials, they absolutely are very interested and want climate change legislation because they realize that maybe, you know, the generation that's in here right now, but in 10 years, we may be in a midst of, you know, air might be polluted, you know, the temperatures and the storms and everything else may be out of control. So if we don't start doing something now, they at least understand that if you try to do something now, it may be better for the future of the planet. So that is one thing that the younger people, the younger voters, are very interested in, and they will vote blue because of that reason. And they'll vote blue because of the Roe versus Wade being overturned as well. So I think as far as young people go, they're more in tune with these sort of policies than, let's say, someone that's 60 years old or 65 or even in your 50s. You know, they don't care so much about climate change, you know, because it doesn't, it's probably not going to affect me, so why do I care? I'll probably be dead by then. You know, that's the comments that I've heard. And also, you know, and even, but I think that the abortion issue, even if you're older, because if you have grandchildren and daughters, that issue is probably an issue that more women care about. I think that's the top issue, in my opinion. But for the younger people, climate change is a big deal. It really is a big deal. So, I mean,
right.
We
and
have
number three. Yes. Mm-hmm. And number three on this list says the most consequential federal gun safety bill in decades. In the aftermath of May's devastating mass shooting at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, Congress finally passed legislation that aims to address the scourge of gun violence. While the bipartisan Safer Communities Act doesn't go as far as most gun safety activists would like, it enhances background checks for prospective gun buyers under the age of 21 and requires law enforcement authorities to have time to examine juvenile records, including mental health records, beginning at age 16, which, by the way, let me also throw in there that when you look at Texas, which obviously that's where the shooting took place, that's Uvalde, the Republican governor down there, Greg Abbott, I think it was him. Now, I don't know if it was him that did it through executive order or if the Texas State House did this and he signed it into law, but essentially what he did was he allowed people to purchase guns at the age of 16. And as a result, and then you have stuff like this that happens, and it's like, you know, do you really think that somebody, if Beto O'Rourke had got elected governor, it's like, do you really think he would have done that? And if that law was put into place, he would reverse that. So
he would have
I don't know if he would have raised it to 18 or 21, but to buy it at 16, I mean, no.
No. No, that's wrong.
And
absolutely
so the number four was the largest ever national investment in mental health. The bipartisan Safer Communities Act was largely discussed as a gun safety bill, but in reality, the bill is actually more of an investment in mental health than anything else. The law provides roughly $10 billion in funding for mental health care, the largest ever investment in America's mental health care system, and a critical one at a time when rates of anxiety on the rise, especially among young Americans. Most of that funding will go towards expanding certified community behavioral health clinics in every state. These clinics, which already exist in a handful of states, as part of a Medicaid pilot program, are required to treat patients for mental health and or substance use issues. Regardless of their insurance coverage, these clinics also provide a 24/7 crisis response, medication-assisted treatment, and also have shown promise in treating patients. The bill includes $1 billion to increase the number of mental health counselors in schools, a good move, provide additional funding for pediatric mental health care, distribute grants for mental behavior and behavioral health organizations and community groups, and establish additional funding for the new 988 National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And then, of course, we get to number five, which is canceling up to $20,000 in federal student loans for tens of millions of Americans. Go ahead.
Eric, can I just say something about that number four for a minute?
Go ahead.
As far as the mental health issue goes, every time, I don't know if you've noticed, but it seems like every time there is a mass shooting, they always say that the shooter has a mental health problem. I mean, just the last one, that's what they said about him. And that was probably very true. I'm not saying that it's not true. But if Republicans really feel, because that's what they're using as their excuse, it was a mental health problem, why haven't they introduced any sort of legislation to better our health care system when it comes to mental health? I haven't seen anything come across. Have you?
I haven't, and I actually saw a debate between a Democrat and a Republican candidate, and if I remember correctly, I think it was in – let me double-check right here. What state is Nancy Mace? She is in what state is she in? She's in South Carolina. So I saw the South Carolina congressional debate, and it was between her versus the Democratic candidate, Annie Andrews. And so Nancy Mace brought up the fact that Annie Andrews supported things like the Mental Health Matters Act, which, by the way, was a state-local policy at the time. But she didn't state why it was bad. And I don't even know if Annie, like, defended why it was good. But Republicans have this natural talent of pointing out these policies and ideas that Democrats propose. And then when they just say it's bad, they already just have a number of people that just believe them without any form of research or education and just say, yep, they said it. Nancy May said it's bad, so it must be bad.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, you know.
And
but
so
they use
and that's
it.
The thing about it. I would have to look up the Mental Health Matters Act, and I think it was also on a federal level too. Once I get more information on that, I'm going to cover that part in my show as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll cover that. I'll cover that when I do the YouTube video on it. And then number five is canceling up to $20,000 in student debt per individual. Over 44 million Americans hold $1.6 trillion in federal student debt, you know, altogether, a crisis brought upon by the skyrocketing cost of higher education and stagnant levels of federal aid, which together has forced millions of students from middle and low-income families to take on burdensome loans. In August of 2022, President Biden delivered these Americans welcome news when he announced an executive order to cancel up to $20,000 in federal student loan debt for tens of millions of borrowers and make systemic changes to ensure future repayment terms are far more fair for low and middle income borrowers. Now, under his plan, an estimated 20 million people are expected to be eligible to have their remaining debt fully canceled, with benefits overwhelmingly flowing to Americans earning under $75,000 per year. Now, I think that kind of, and I don't know if that contradicts what I initially read or this is talking about something different. I thought the policy was that we're going to cancel. So for anybody who makes under $125,000 a year, we're going to cancel $10,000 per individual, but we'll cancel $20,000 if you're a recipient of Pell Grant. So, but either way, it's still a, what this is talking about right here is still a step more than what any president has done in recent decades in regard to student debt. And here's the thing, since they talk about, you know, having all this debt, because we have a bunch of student debt, we have high medical debt, we have high auto debt and credit card debt and mortgage debt and, you know, school lunch debt was much relatively, relatively lower. First of all, the way we can avoid all these debts is just to have tuition-free community college, and then, you know,
that would be nice.
That would, those people would have jobs and careers that they can make enough money, which a lot of them are doing, that can pay off those loans. So this goes to having community college free is an economic benefit because more people are making money because more people are getting educated and they're going to whatever they want to go for. And then with that money they have, they're paying that off, and then they're paying their fair share in taxes, which also helps the economy. So therefore, that is beneficial. Elaine, what do you have to say about that?
What about the debts? The college debts, I would like to know why there is such a discrepancy between schools. One school for a full program will charge $7,000 for the year, and another school will charge $21,000. And yet you turn on the TV from now until forever, and you see nothing but a bunch of college games, and you see packed stadiums. Where is that money going? It sure as heck isn't going into a reduced college fees, is it?
Oh, no. You know,
yeah,
you
I don't
take
think
your,
so.
No, and, you know, you take, like, U of M, and you, and I'm not a football fan or anything like that, but U of M or Michigan State, you're right, Elaine. Those stadiums are jam-packed with people, and you know that they make millions of dollars off of this.
Billions.
Their games, off season, millions. I have no idea how many, but I'm guessing millions of dollars on these students and, you know, playing football. And you're right. You know, why don't they give some of it back? Why? That's the problem. No one likes to give anything back. You know,
well, they're now serving alcohol at these games.
Oh,
so
I
you know there's going to be a 1,000% profit on that.
And not only that, that's dangerous in my eyes.
Well, they're serving alcohol to generate more money. Now, I would like to know why there is such a big discrepancy. You can go to Wayne State and pay an average of $7,000 to $10,000 for a full year's worth of studies. I shouldn't say a full year. I think it's a quarter. Yet you can go to Michigan State, and your quarter is $21,000.
Yeah,
something doesn't compute.
No,
it's the same education.
Well, it is the same education, but they've made it so that it's also a status thing. You know what I'm saying? It's
I mean, something's got to be done. I'm just plain getting tired of the people who make the big bucks can send their kids to college.
Oh yeah. And, you know, and not only that, don't think that, you know, it's not always the students that are paying. A lot of times the parents go into debt so they can pay for their college But, you know, also it is a status thing for the parents because they can talk about, you know, my son's at U of M or, you know, Michigan State or at Harvard.
I know
Harvard
exactly what you're talking about. I've got friends that do that.
Yes, and I've heard that over and over again. So, but that, you know, that within itself, whatever, if that's your thing, you want to pay for your child's college, go right ahead, you know, whatever you want to do. But
I just don't understand the disparity in this. I brought this up before. From now until sometime in the spring, you're going to see one college game after another. And college games, those stands are packed. They also have the VIP rooms where they pay like $1,000 a person to be in those rooms because they get to drink beer and eat.
Yeah,
they're making big old bucks.
All right,
we want to know how much, and we want to know how much is going back to the school.
Wow.
I think it's time for transparency for the schools.
Yeah, it's, you know, like I said, you know, these college students, I feel bad for them because they're in, you know, when they're in high school, they are just told from ninth grade through 12th grade that, you know, their goal is to go to college, go to college, go to college. Not everyone, not every student is college bound because they have different skills. So it makes no sense to me that, you know, and then these kids are under so much pressure. And a lot of them are, their parents can't pay for it. They have to pay for it. They're $20,000, $30,000 in debt for one semester. It's crazy. And they will never get out from under that debt unless you're making $500,000 a year when you graduate. That's the only way.
That's the other thing. Why isn't it simple interest? Why is it compound interest? I thought extortion was a thing of the past.
Yeah, I never understood why they have compound interest. It is so unfair to these students. It really is unfair. And in other countries, you know, you don't have to pay for college. I know in Italy you do not. You don't pay for college. You just go off to college, you know, and you get an education. That's just how it is there. So I don't know how to fix it, but at least the Democrats are trying to take away a little of the burden. And if it's $20,000, if they can get that, that's great, you know.
Well, I think the dialogue has started. I think that we're, you know, I'm trying to bring out different points. You're trying to bring out different points. Mm-hmm. The program, Kitchen Politics 123, is bringing out different points. This is going to get people to start thinking and start asking questions. And this is where we have to go as a country.
Exactly. And if you want to call in, this is Kitchen Politics 123, the radio show. And the number to call is 515-605-9802. And all you have to do is just say your first name and where you're calling from, and we'll be glad to talk to you. Okay,
yes.
Eric, you want to...
And then here's what I'm going to do. So I'll read the rest of the bullet points there, but some of them I'll kind of shorten up just to kind of give you the gist. Of course, we already know this, but again, this is just to kind of educate the public. So the rest of it is 6 through 10. Number 6 is a general investment in American industry and manufacturing. The CHIPS and Science Act, which Biden signed into law in August of 2021 or 2, that was to change that by dramatically increasing domestic microchip manufacturing and a move that aims to strengthen supply chains, lower costs for consumers, and create jobs for American workers and make the United States more economically independent. And, you know, on a side note, and this also brought back 800,000 over 800,000 manufacturing jobs on top of an additional almost 400,000 jobs that some of them may not have been manufacturing. There were other things. But, again, when people think the American worker and the working class, a lot of those people tend to work in places like that. I mean, you're talking construction workers. You're talking truck drivers, warehouse workers, the factory workers, and this CHIP Act brought back over 1 million of those jobs, which a lot of it, you know, let's face it, a lot of jobs were outsourced under the last few presidents. And
yes, they were.
And so far, I haven't seen one reporting of Biden outsourcing even one job. So far, he's been onshoring jobs, which is essentially the opposite. And so that helped with that.
Mm-hmm.
You had number seven, which is billions of dollars in investments in workers, families, and communities. There was a huge one for Biden administration's legislative accomplishments in 2021 with the American Rescue Plan Act and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. The American Rescue Plan was best known for providing $1,400 stimulus checks to most Americans and expanding the child tax credit for parents, but those temporary policies obscured some of the long-term investments provided by the law. And for those of you who don't know this, that the child tax credit where they, I think it was a child anywhere between the ages of 6 and 17, they were provided with $3,600, or maybe it was $3,000, and I think a child under 6 was like $3,600. So, and then you have the American Rescue Plan also provided funding for public safety and crime reduction efforts. It funded affordable housing development across the country. It provided much-needed financial support to small businesses. Tens of billions of dollars were invested into that. Invested into health care centers and mental health treatment, expanded food assistance programs to keep families out of hunger, expanded child care assistance, and invested in schools and child care programs. And a lot of that money also went towards bridge repair. More than $3 billion in funds went to upgrade infrastructure at more than 3,000 airports. More than $9 billion to improve America's water infrastructure, pipes, and service lines and sewer systems. They make homes more energy efficient, and more than $200 million went to help families pay outstanding energy bills, lowered energy costs. Let's see. It helped many Americans, over 15 million Americans, millions of households, to help them afford high-speed internet. Number eight is reducing the cost of gas by releasing oil from the National Strategic Reserve. And again, as we can see, and I don't know why people are still saying that gas prices are as high as they've been. No, they were as high as they've been 2021 and early 2022, and the prices started to go down. I actually I was on vacation not too long ago. I was in Mississippi. Now, granted, things might be cheaper down there for some things. I saw a Shell gas station that was $2.62, the lowest I've seen in a long time. I passed a gas station somewhere here on Ford Road in Dearborn Heights. It was $2.68. There's a Shell and Mobil and other gas stations around me that I've seen between the prices of like $2.90, $3.10, $3.20, maybe up to $3.30. Those are still amazing numbers compared to what we had a couple years ago.
And so, again,
the administration is working to fix these things, and people don't seem to understand that. Number nine is one of my favorite ones, improving health care for veterans affected by toxic burn pits. For years, tens of thousands of U.S. veterans were exposed to cancer-causing toxins from burn pits while serving overseas, mostly in places like Afghanistan and Iraq. They struggled to access the care that they needed. But last summer, the Congress passed the Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics, which is PACT, the PACT Act into law, expanding health care coverage for more than 3 million veterans exposed to toxins while serving. And again, now, to be fair, I will say this. There were a lot more Republicans that voted on this than I thought. So when I looked at the votes in the Senate, I saw that at least 10 to 12, maybe even closer to maybe 15 Republicans actually voted for it, and that's way more than I thought. But most of the Republicans that were in the House, they voted against it. The bill was introduced. I remember this one off the top of my head. There's a congressman in California by the name of Mark Takano. He was the one who actually introduced the bill, and, of course, it passed Nancy Pelosi's House, and then luckily, you know, Joe Manchin and, you know, Chuck Schumer and all the ones in the Senate, additional with some Republicans voted for it, Biden passed the law. I actually brought that point up in a video a few days before the midterm election in 2022, where I was telling people, if you're a veteran or you know somebody who's a veteran, and let's say they had some of these health problems, just know that this act was signed into law to help people like them, and most Democrats were for it, and most Republicans were against it. I know that people get tired of me saying that, but I'm giving you the facts. And when you weigh the pros and cons and the facts up and down on both sides and how they voted, that'll help you make a more educated decision on who to vote for when you get to the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
That was number 9. And then finally, number 10, reforming the U.S. Postal Service to ensure long-term stability. More than 500,000 Americans work for the U.S. Postal Service, and hundreds of millions rely on the mail agency to deliver everything from medication to paychecks to food and other items and whatever else that you ordered. But the agency's finances have long been in crisis due to a decline in mail volume and a 2006 law that required the USPS to pre-fund retirees' health care costs. In 2022, the federal government acted to address these issues as Congress passed and Biden signed the Postal Service Reform Act, which is a bipartisan law that costs $107 billion that will modernize the organization and ensure financial stability. Now, also in this article, it talks about a few other accomplishments and achievements that Biden and Harris did that really matter. He oversaw the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, which aims to protect victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, mm-hmm. and stalking. The landmark law needs to be renewed every 5 years, and it previously lapsed in 2019. Gee, I wonder why. Biden led the global alliance that has supported Ukraine and provided billions in funding to help the democratic country defend itself against Russia's brutal invasion. He signed the Respect for Marriage Act into law. He nominated and Senate Democrats confirmed the first black woman to serve on the U.S. Supreme Court. And other things that I can list off top, I mean, he did pardon some marijuana offenses. He also signed into law a $15 minimum wage that only went to the federal workers and the contractors. Now, we're still pushing to get that across the board, but that's still a good start. Again, he also provided $1,400 stimulus checks. He pulled us out of Afghanistan. He cut the contracts that the Department of Justice had with private prisons. He put a pause on the weapons deal that the United States had with the Saudis. So he temporarily stopped aiding and abetting the genocide that took place in Yemen by the Saudi Arabian terrorists. And so when I tell people these things, I say it's how could you look at those things? And then, you know, people get tired of, you know, bringing up Trump and saying all the bad things that Trump said and did. But we're going into a general election where it's most likely going to be Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. So when you look at the two candidates, I'm comparing the two administrations and how they ran. And none of those even came close to anything that was done under, like I said, with Trump, he didn't touch any of that. And so, so Elaine, what do you make of that so far?
So far, it sounds good.
Yeah. I mean,
so
we
far,
have
it sounds good. We just have to keep talking about it, that's all.
Yeah, we have an administration that is actually working for the people and passing legislation to make the lives better of the, you know, of the middle class, the working people of this country, and actually not just the middle class, of all people. That's what he's working for. This administration cares about its population. It cares about education. It cares about health care. It cares about, you know, we have in the past just had, and now they're trying to take everything away from us. I mean, you know, abortion and, I mean, the list goes on. Every single day there's something that they want to change or take away to make our lives more irritating than they are already. And
I think what we have to do is we have to keep talking the narrative. Whether you're in the grocery store line, you're sitting in the doctor's or dentist's office, or you're at a casino or a bar, if you or a restaurant, if you get in a conversation with someone and for some reason you start talking about daily things which you can throw in a little punchline, do it.
Mm-hmm.
I do it all the time to the younger girls. I'll say, you know, they look at me and they say, oh, wow, you're that age. And I says, yeah, you know, at one time I wasn't allowed to have a credit card. And they look at me like, yeah, right, you know. And I explain to them, no, I did not, was not allowed to have a credit card. And they listen very intently. And I explained to them that these rights are being taken away from them. And then I prod them a little, and they ask me by who. And I tell them the Republican Party. Don't believe me, Google it. I always leave them with that. Don't believe me, Google it. Research it.
Okay, but you know what? But you know what? Here's my question, Elaine. So when you talk to people on the right or even people in the middle who say that they're voting Republican or at least say that they might lean towards voting Republican in a certain election, but then you have their people pouting and saying that people like Rick Scott and all them who want to cut Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, is that a point that you bring up to them? And if so, what's their response to it?
Well, I try to keep, to the best of my ability, I try to keep out whether they're a Republican or a Democrat. You pretty much can tell what they are. I will not bring up those words. All I'll do is I will talk on the subject, and I will push the subject. And then somewhere in the subject, I will explain under what administration these bills were passed. And, you know, it's not too hard to say the Clinton administration. They know it was a Democrat. So that's
well,
all
you
I
know,
do it. Because these far-right ones, the minute you start putting a label on it, they get hostile, and I want to push a point across.
Well, but you know what? But here's the thing that here's another thing that I struggle with, because, you know, when I talk to regular independent voters, even the ones who might lean Democrat and even the ones who might lean Republican, when I bring up certain policy actions and policy proposals and ideas, and then I bring in Democrat, Republican, yes, you're right. There are some people who keep telling me to stop bringing in the two parties and actually look at the candidates and look at the things that they're saying and the policies. Here's the thing about that. The only reason why I can only halfway agree with that from both from what you're saying and from what they've told me is that the reason why I do tend to bring the parties into the conversation is because each of the parties has a structure. They have their own quote-unquote little manifesto. You have in the Democratic platform X, Y, and Z, which also ties into another article that Lori sent me that we're getting ready to dive into as we're kind of doing now, that we look at most of the basic social, fiscal issues, and even some foreign issues, that most Democrats do lean one way on one thing, and then you have most of the Republicans saying the opposite. So, for example, when you – if you're talking to – if a UAW worker is talking to Joe Biden and Donald Trump, Biden is telling them – like if I was a UAW worker and I'm talking to Biden and Trump, Biden is telling me, hey, I support your right to protest and support your right to strike. I stand by you. I'm with you. And me and my administration are going to work to negotiate a pay raise for you. And then meanwhile, you have Trump telling me that I should be fired because I'm striking, and therefore he does not support the idea that I should get a wage. And so when I look at those two things alone, why is there a conflict?
I hate to interrupt you, but there are some hardcore people out there, and I got into a dialogue with a UAW person, and when I said that Biden is the one that is working for you, he told me to go to effing hell, that he loves Trump, and to shut my mouth. So sometimes the argument isn't worth pushing.
No.
Well, but you know what?
I don't understand.
But you know what? Right quick. I do want to say this.
Plus, he thought he was being so cool because he was being a mean-spirited Donald Trump woman hater. So you
walk
away.
But you know what?
I don't want to get hurt.
Oh no.
Well, you know what? You know what? I guess with that last part of that perspective, I can kind of understand that. But at the same time, and I know almost most Democrats will disagree with me on this, that this is why I said that, and I don't understand personally how a UAW worker could support almost any Republican because they're not doing anything for them. I will say this. There's a that argument alone, that right there, what you told me about your the little verbal conflict between you and that person, is the main reason why I said for as much as I despise Trump, for as much as I despise the Republicans, if they're lucky enough to take the White House and they have the government again and they reverse a lot of the Biden-Obama policies, which, of course, Trump already reversed a number of Obama policies, if they reverse the Biden policies, and let's say the UAW workers never get what they want, even though they're on strike, then there's a part of me that is going to feel sorry for them because now they've gotten financially screwed. But then on the other part, there's a part of me that is feeling vindicated only in the sense that I can look at those people and tell them, this is what we told you what was going to happen. So how can you be on strike and support the presidential candidate who told you that you shouldn't be striking, and you're opposing the president who told you, yes, you have a right to strike? Now, Elaine, to be fair, to the point that you made, yes, there are some people that are just so hot-headed and so hard-headed and just so in their own corner and in their own zone that they're not smart enough to see that logic. And so that's why I said I'm a little bit of a believer in the fact that, you know, listen, I don't necessarily like the idea that something bad has to happen to a person in order for them to see it. But at the same time, there's a part of me that says, well, if this really is the only way that they could see it, then maybe they're less likely to vote for a Republican in the following election. I mean, what do you think of that analysis, Elaine?
Well, I don't know. This guy was married 3 times. He loved Trump to the ultimate end. He didn't believe in paying his union dues. I could have called him a scab. But I didn't. Like I said, I just stopped the argument. I don't want to get hurt. The man was getting hot, and I don't think he would have thought twice about decking me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? And like I said, for your safety,
you can't win them all.
I mean, I support your right to obviously not continue a conversation with that person, because obviously that wasn't the right person to talk to. And like you said, there's going to be hotheads on both sides. And for whatever reason,
but the
saving
grace, there was a lot of men who overheard the conversation. And
to be fair,
by my politeness and knowing the facts, I know that I got them thinking. I don't know how they felt, but they listened very intently.
Well, you know what? To be fair, here's the only one logical explanation I can see. Right quick. The only one logical explanation I can see for that is maybe it's possible that even though he didn't want to admit it, and I don't know him, so I can't – this is just an assumption. This is just a, you know, speculation. Maybe it could be possible that he may not have liked Trump's specific stance on the UAW, but he's still a right-winger when it comes to the other issues. So maybe he agrees with Trump on things like the immigration or the foreign policy or other fiscal issues, but he could disagree with Trump on that, which is why he could still support him. Because even with the Democrats that I voted for, they each have at least one thing I disagree with. Obama, Hillary Clinton.
He had a screw loose. He said Melania – not Melania. I forgot her name. Mrs. Obama, Michelle. He said Michelle was a man. I mean, come on.
Michelle was a man.
Well, you know what? Like I said, again, that person more likely is just too far gone, and they just don't have. I mean, we were going to – let me see. The differences with the – now, Lori, if you want to take this one, you can dive into the article about the differences between the two parties.
Yep, that's a good idea. We'll do that next. Democrat versus Republican. This comparison, it just examines the differences between the two parties. The Democrats' philosophy is liberal, left-leaning, and Republican is conservative, right-leaning. Economic ideas. The Democrats are minimum wage and progressive. Taxation, higher tax for higher income brackets, born out of the anti-federalist ideals, but evolved over time to favor more government regulation. Republican believes taxes should be increased for anyone, including the wealthy, and the wages should be set by the free market. Those are non-starters, because if you don't tax, if we don't have tax, then we don't have roads, bridges, subway. We don't have anything. We don't have any infrastructure. Everything will be. So how can they make a statement like that and think that it's going to work for our economy? It does not. Let's see. Social and human ideas. The Democrats are based on community and social responsibility, and Republicans based on individual rights and justice. Stance on military issues. Democrats decreased spending. Republicans want increased spending. Stance on gay marriage. Democrats support, but there are some that disagree, but in general, Democrats support gay marriage, and Republicans oppose, and there are some Republicans that disagree. Stance on abortion. Should remain legal, and they support Roe versus Wade. Republicans should not be legal, with some exceptions, oppose Roe versus Wade. Stance on the death penalty. While support for the death penalty is strong among Democrats, opponents of the death penalty are a substantial fraction of the Democratic base. A large majority of Republicans support the death penalty. Stance on taxes. Progressive high-income earners should be taxed at higher rates. Generally not opposed to raising taxes to fund government. And Republicans tend to favor a flat tax. Same tax rate regarding less of income and generally opposed to taxes. Stance on government regulation. Government regulations by Democrats are needed to protect consumers. Republicans, government regulations hinder free market and capitalism and job growth. The health care policy. Democrats support universal health care, strong support of government involvement in health care, including Medicare and Medicaid, generally support Obamacare. Republicans. Private companies can provide health care services more efficiently than government-run programs. Oppose Obamacare provisions like, number one, requirements for individuals to buy health insurance or pay a fine. Number two, required coverage of contraceptives. stance on immigration, the Democrats. There is a greater overhaul support in the Democratic Party for moratorium on deporting or offering a pathway to citizenship. Certain undocumented immigrants, those with no criminal record who have lived here in the U.S. for 5 years plus. Republicans. Republicans are generally against amnesty for any undocumented immigrant. They also oppose President Obama's executive order to put a moratorium on deporting certain workers. Republicans also fund strong enforcement action at the border. Traditionally, strong in states, Democrat, California, Massachusetts, and New York, and Republican, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Texas. The Democrat, the symbol is a donkey. The Republican is the elephant. The color is blue. Republican is red. Founded in 1824 for Democrats. Founded in 1854 for Republicans. The website is www.democrats.org. Republican is www.gop.com. The Senate leader is Chuck Schumer, Democrat. And Republican is Mitch McConnell. The chairperson is Tom Perez. And Democrat side, Ronald Romney McDaniel is a Republican. The famous president as a Democrat is Franklin D. Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy, Bill Clinton, Woodrow Wilson, Jimmy Carter, and Barack Obama. And on the Republican side was Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Ronald Reagan, George Bush and Richard Nixon. I disagree with the Republican side, except for a couple. Seats in the Senate, Democrats 45 or 100, not including independent senators who caucus with the Democratic Party. And Republicans, 53 out of 100. Seats in the House of Representatives, at the Democratic side, 235 over 435. And Republicans, 200 over 435. Governorships on the Democratic side are 23 over 50. Republican side, 27 over 50. Membership for Democrats are, as of 2017, is 44.7 million. And in Republican side, 32.8 million. So that's basically the differences right there. Excuse me. The other thing I want to mention before we go on, we can't forget that on Tuesday, November 7th, are elections, and they're not in every city in every state. So you have to check and go online, you know, go to your Secretary of State and check to see if there's any voting that's going on in your township or your city. And don't forget to vote on November the 7th on Tuesday. And then also, just to talk a little bit about, these are some of the Democrats that are running in the state on November 7th in Kentucky. The seat is HD 93. This is all for Democrats. Massachusetts, SD 06, Worcester, and Hampshire. Maine is HD 50, New Hampshire, HD Hillsborough 3, Rhode Island, SD 1, South Carolina, SD 42, and Texas, HD 2. And that's if you're in any of those states, those are the elections that are going on in your state.
Well, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
And so I say this. So I pretty much agree with most of that. And, you know, with those differences that you laid out right there, and again, I want to make another point that goes to, and like I said, Elaine, if you're talking to the right person, and like I said, the guy that you said you were talking to, people like him don't count. If we talk to people on the other side who are rational-minded people, who are truly good people at heart, who are not racist, who are not misogynistic, who are not bigoted or xenophobic or whatever, that if they are voting Republican, and there are certain things that I would, let's say, bring up, if they would bring up the argument to say, well, you voted for people like Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, and you have things within that you disagree with, then what's the difference between me voting for people like Bush, McCain, Romney, Trump, disagree with them? Here's the thing. The one main point that I would tell these people is, again, this is not to come across as you're not allowed to vote Republican. What I'm saying is that, and this per se is not even necessarily an argument for the Democrats. People just have to take the time to examine all the issues that they feel that they care about, whether it's one issue or 10 issues or more than that, and look at each of the issues. And even if you were to eliminate the parties out of the question, you look at the two candidates who are debating each other on stage, whether they're running for president, governor, Senate, Congress, wherever, and then based on what they say, that their ideas or policy proposals are on those issues, kind of weigh it out and see, well, which one do you agree with more in terms of where you want to get to? And that'll also kind of factor into their voting analysis on how they go forward. What do you think of that, Elaine?
Well, that's pretty much what I do without mentioning a party. I tell them to put their issues in a column and see which people agree with it. And usually I'll have a dialogue about, well, how do you feel about helping people? Well, and they'll tell you that they want to help people. Well, what kind of help do you want to give them? And then I tell them to put the issues in a column and then see which candidate is more to their liking. And I know darn well how it's going to come out. It's going to come out Democratic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you're right, Eric. If they've already got hate in their heart, You're not gonna change them. That hate is there.
Well, you know what?
I don't want to pull it out.
If I had holy water,
I'd throw it on them.
The other thing is you have to remember is that a lot of these Republicans are also so-called Christians, and you know they have to bring that into the conversation, and that's a hard thing to talk about. It really is, because religion does not belong in our politics at all. And now we have a speaker that's bringing, you know, his Christianity or whatever the heck he is. He says he's a Christian, a devout Christian. And, you know, he's bringing, he wants them to go into the chapel. Did you guys hear this one? He wants the GOP, the Republicans, Congress, the House there, all the members, when they come in, they're to go into the chapel and they're to say a prayer before they go on and do their business on the floor.
Oh, but the good-hearted soul wants to eliminate low-income
right.
housing, which means they'll
yes.
put seniors out on the street in a cardboard
yes.
box. That is one way I would tell a devout Christian point blank. I would say, okay, fine, I'll go in his little chapel and say a prayer, but he better not vote against low-income housing, because I do not want to see seniors in a cardboard box down by the river. Sometimes you got to get a little strong. Depends on who you're talking to. You got to play each individual different.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sometimes when you're talking politics, you think you're a psychiatrist trying to figure them out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you a question, Elaine, because I feel that, because I know that there's a number of hardcore Democrats who probably have had the opportunity to do this, and many who probably haven't. And I may have talked to a little bit of them, because like I said, I have friends since high school or right after high school, whatever. Have you ever actually talked to a person who is a Trump supporter that seems to be a good, kind person, but let's say they're not racist and they're not sexist, but they support Trump? If you've talked to anybody like that, have they ever given you a legitimate reason as to why they like him? And if so, what would be that reason? Or what would
I haven't met that kind of a Trump supporter. I'm going to be totally honest. I have not met that kind of a Trump supporter. I have met independent voters, but I have not met a Trump supporter who doesn't have hate somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well,
including in my own family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? And I guess that kind of brings me to my next question, too. And then after this, then I will kind of sum up some of the other articles to kind of shorten it up. Here's the thing. To go back to the point I was making about, like, you and I were talking about the whole thing about not bringing in the party factor when we talk to these people. Well, I look at it like this. When I talk to people who have voted for I think I talked to somebody at my job who was a former supervisor, and he's an independent voter, but for the most part could lean towards Republican. So this guy voted for Bill Clinton. I think he may have possibly voted for George Bush once, maybe. I think the second Bush. He voted for Obama and then voted for Trump twice. And I basically told him, like, okay, so almost every person you voted for, they just won the election, so you felt that you won almost every time. So I guess the thing about it is they vote for a Democrat because they believe these amount of issues and they agree with them. So you agree, like this person will say that he agreed with the executive order that Bill Clinton signed that essentially banned assault rifles for, you know, and it the bill expired in 2003 under Bush. But then Bush had a set of ideas and policies that he agreed with, and then he voted for him. The same thing happened with Obama. The same thing happened for Trump, and for a number of other people, the same thing that happened with Biden, because they vote for him because we feel that we agree on these issues. I guess the reason my question is, how can I leave out the party factor in the conversation when I'm trying to find out and figure out why these people have a list of issues that they care about, but sometimes they agree with the Democrats on it and sometimes the Republicans when they're two opposing viewpoints? Like, that's what I'm trying to figure out. How do you do that?
I don't know. You got to play each person by ear.
Eric,
there's
no figuring it out. Think about this for a second. Just think about this. We have someone that is running for president for a second term that has 91 indictments against him. He has, four trials going on that are going to be going on pretty soon. He is, he's being in the one trial in New York. It's for fraud. One has to do with our most secret documents that we have, most sacred and secret documents that we have that were leaked. The other one is in Georgia, is for the election deniers and that scheme, that whole deal there. I mean, this, and then the insurrection, that's another one. So we have a man that basically tried to overthrow our government. He's committed fraud. He's lied basically his whole life about everything that there is to lie about. He was a lousy president. What is it that we can do? And he is leading in the polls. He is leading in the polls. Explain to me how this can be. Do people not understand that when you are indicted for 91 counts of something, at least a few of them you're going to get convicted of? Because our justice system is not broken. They just don't go around slapping people and saying, oh, you're indicted for this and you're indicted for that. This is years of work that these people have put in to show what he's done, been illegal, and the insurrection. I'm sorry, but he's a traitor. He is a traitor. That is the worst thing you can be. They used to hang traitors. And we have a man that is running for president. He's supposedly leading in the polls. What is wrong with America? What is wrong with America? That is my
question. I'll tell you exactly what's wrong with America. America is on a societal decline. We are on
That's
a mental
it.
Decline. The fact that that guy is the leading contender in the Republican nomination and could possibly be a few minutes away from being president again, that tells you all you need to know. That says a lot more about his supporters than it does him.
Yes. That's what I'm saying to you. That is what I'm trying to come across. What is it that's in the water? What is wrong with these people that they've not rejected somebody that is so vile? He's broken so many laws. He's hurt so many people that it's not funny. I read a story about a man that was he was a designer, and he was an architect, actually. And he had a new business. And he had some plans for the dining room at Mar-a-Lago, okay? And, Trump was not president at the time. This is going back many years, like 2006 or 2 or something like that. And he hired him. They had a contract. Everything was signed. This man put up his own money. He was a new business. He put up his own money to do this lavish dining room at Mar-a-Lago. And when he was done, it took him quite a while. It turned out beautiful. It took him a while. It, like I said, he had to, pay his employees. They paid for all the construction costs and everything else. Then he was supposed to get paid. They paid him a quarter of what he was supposed to get. It didn't even cover his costs. So he tried to sue Trump. Well, he tried to sue him, and then the lawyers, there was 15 cars that came to his office with all these men, not Trump, he wasn't there, and one of them, a few of them were lawyers, and they said to him, this is what you're going to get, because if you want to sue Trump, you can go ahead and sue, but I promise you that you will be suing him for the rest of your life. So if you want this check, this is what you get, or else you can sue them and go bankrupt. That is basically what they said. They showed up with 15 men in his office. And then he called Trump.
Why do you think New York is not, they have a very small minority for Trump in New York?
Oh, yeah.
Because
absolutely.
So many people got stiffed.
Yes, so many stories.
Not Kissinger. How do you pronounce his name? The one that was on the committee with Cheney.
Liz Cheney.
Pardon?
Yes. King.
Oh, you're talking about Adam Kinzinger.
Kinzinger, yeah.
Yeah.
His own family calls him a rhino.
Well, wait a minute. His own family sent him a, what do they call those letters when you get them in the mail and you got to sign them?
Registered mail.
Yeah. He got a registered letter from his family disowning him because of what he did on the January 6th committee. A registered letter from his family. So think about that. Served, in the services. He is an honorable man. Yes, he's a Republican. He said he's going to vote for Biden. He already said that. But I'm just saying, his own family sent him a registered letter and disowned him. How do you get into the
brains
of
these people? Lori, all I can say is this. There are a lot of Republicans out there who are being very quiet right now, and they're just waiting to go to the polls to turn this around. And we have to just work on the other independents, and we've got to work on these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Two of us are kids. They're adults, the young adults. We've got to work on them and get them out to the polls. That's the only way we're going to turn this decline down around.
Mm-hmm.
I am just as fearful as I can be.
Yeah.
And when I see somebody is hardcore and I can't change them, I'm keeping my mouth shut, and I hope the day before the election they get drunk and they can't get up the next day to go vote.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it is now wrap-up time. We're getting to that point. So, Eric, is there a point that you want to make?
So like I said, so anybody who's listening to the show, whether you're liberal, conservative, centrist, independent, whatever, of course the gist of this show is about promoting the achievements and the accomplishments and the proposed ideas of the Democratic Party from the White House all the way down to state local elections. When people get out to go vote, it's not just the presidential election that matters. It's the governor's election. It's the Senate election, the congressional election, because it also goes to the state courts, the county, city council, all the way down to the school board. So people, when you get up to vote, vote on all levels. Again, I'm a precinct delegate, activist, trustee in the Democratic Party. I reach out to Democrats across the country. I get email updates from Democratic officials in other states. Again, the name is Eric Brantley, E-R-I-K-B-R-A-N-T-L-E-Y. You can find me on Facebook. I'm on Lori Pickle's friend list, also David Franklin and Elaine. I'm Facebook. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram. I have a YouTube channel where I promote Democratic accomplishments and also talk about many other things in that channel that are not necessarily political related. So feel free to reach out to me. I'm an occasional co-host of this show. This is Kitchen Politics 123, Eric Brantley from Michigan. Feel free to email, text, or message me at any time. Call, text, or email me at any time. I'll be around.
Okay. And my last thought, I think we need to work on the young people, getting them registered. They already know what they want. They want gun control. They want their Roe versus Wade back. They want those rights back. And also, they're interested in climate change. Those are the three main issues that the Gen Z and the millennials are worried about. Those three issues are their top issues. Not that they're not worried about paying for college and everything else, but those, they have said, are their top three issues. So we have to find a way to, talk to these young people, get them excited, get them to register to vote. Because I am afraid that if we do not win this election, and I know that we will because I know common sense must rule, but if we don't, then Project 2025, you can look it up, you can Google it, 3 nights here last week. It's horrific, and it'll just destroy the country if the Republicans get in power. So let's talk about voting blue. Let's talk about President Biden and the administration and all the good things that they're doing and trying to do to keep this country going forward. Elaine, do you have a final thought?
I sure do. And this goes to Rashida in Dearborn, Michigan. Rashida, I have nothing against the Palestinian people. I have nothing against you who are Palestinian. Stop the mean, hateful rhetoric. Hamas is the one that started the war.
Yes.
We do not, the people do not agree with what Netanyahu is doing, including the Jewish people who have been in the same protests alongside of Palestinian people. Stop the hate.
Yep.
That's my message to you. I have talked to this woman before. She is not. She is not a very nice person. She has an awful lot of hate in her heart. Please.
I know she does.
Melt your heart. Rashida, melt your heart. I know you can be kind if you want to. Stop it. It's not doing anybody any good.
No, it's not.
Too many people are dying, and the hate is not going to help.
No. And, you know, we have to go back. Hamas attacked Israel. Israel is defending itself. Are they maybe going overboard a little bit? Possibly, yes. But also, there is an outcry that we do not want to see people being killed that are innocent. You know.
Well, I'll go a little bit further. Netanyahu is going overboard. He is going overboard because he was in court for the same type of things that Trump is in court for. So he's using this war as a cover. So don't think the people don't know what's going on. We aren't stupid out here. Don't treat us like we're stupid. Rashida,
and the Biden,
take the hate out of your heart and work for all the people. All the people in Michigan of every race, every religion, and every color. Work for all of us, Rashida.
Absolutely. And the Biden administration has gone out of their way to, you know, tell Israel to take some time off. Let these people find a way out of Gaza so they can live their lives somewhere. And it's just, and I don't like what I'm seeing as well.
And like I said, my last word is this. This is my governor, Gretchen Whitmer. As I mentioned before, Governor Gretchen Whitmer has what she devised as a plan to help boost the Democrats for 2024. So once we get more info on that, we're going to follow that plan, get other Democrats on board with that, and let's get Biden and Harris and the top Democrats and all other Democrats to 2024.
Absolutely. I agree. So this has been Kitchen Politics 123 tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show. Our website is www.kitchenpolitics123. This is Lori Picka in Michigan. I hope everyone has a good evening. And Eric, good night to you. Thank you so much for sitting in for David. It was a pleasure. And thank you, Elaine, for calling in tonight. It was a pleasure with you as
well. You're very welcome.
Absolutely.
We'll be on tomorrow night again, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 7:30 Central Time. So everyone have a good evening. Be safe. And let's pray for peace. Thank you all. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Night.